every time we speak, it's about problems with flying. I mean, you've retired how long now?
I've been gone 2 years now.
Yeah.
I was just saying to Jonathan now, I'm actually quite glad I'm out of it now. There's just so much doom and gloom involved, isn't there?
Why do you think this is happening now? Is it because there's more planes or...?
I don't know what it is. I was just saying to Jonathan now, I mean, obviously we'll talk about today's incident separately, but the two flights, obviously the Malaysian one and obviously the AirAsia one that's just gone sort of missing. What I don't understand, and sort of from experience, Peter, is that there should be some sign of something. I mean, yes, okay, it's at the bottom of the ocean, whatever, but an aircraft tends to break up as it hits water.
Right.
So you'd expect to see something, you know, whether it be the smallest amount of, you know, sort of wreckage, but it just doesn't seem to be happening. It hasn't happened with the Malaysian one. They've not found anything at all. Did you not think that's a bit odd?
I do indeed. And, I mean, you've been in the business, so you will hear stories. What are... Talking amongst your ex-colleagues, who I know you're still friends with, are they saying? However bizarre they are, what are they saying?
Well, they can't explain it. I mean, obviously, there are the conspiracy theories, which, you know, everyone comes out with, and, you know, it's sat on an island somewhere, and someone's taking it hostage, and, you know, and to agree, you know, to a degree, Pete, in some ways, you hope that is the case, because it means that all those people are alive.
Yeah.
But I just can't see it. You know, I mean, these guys yesterday on the AirAsia one, they said that they requested sort of a change of height to deal with bad weather, which that's a normal thing. I mean, you know, I 27 years I was there at BA and stuff, and it happened. You know, you went through the most horrendous turbulence, and within a couple of seconds of either going up or down in, you know, a couple of thousand feet, it's gone. These guys couldn't change altitude because there was too much traffic in the area. And basically that was it. You know, as soon as they said, no, we can't, you know, sort of let you have the request to change height, it vanished. It's just bizarre. People.
Now, it's interesting you say about too much traffic in the area. I don't think we understand, do we, how much traffic there is up there?
No. I think one example of that was today. I was watching there's a flight tracker website which tells you about sort of flights in the area, but it also alerts you to any mayday calls and what have you. And it was the one that Sky were actually showing on their TV program. And that, when you look at that and you think, wow, you know, there's two clusters. One is a cluster at Gatwick and one is a cluster at Heathrow. But you're not just talking two and three planes. I mean, you can see pieces, so many, like, you're probably talking like sort of like hundreds of planes in that area at one point.
As many as that?
It's so scary. And the one today that was highlighted, obviously, was the VS-43 Virgin Airlines. That goes red. When an aircraft is in trouble on this particular website, it goes red. So we could see that, you know, circling off the Brighton sort of, you know, coast on, you know. But it just shows you how many aircraft are in that area at one time. And, you know, so it makes you understand that these poor guys that requested a height change, you might think, oh, they could let them go up 2,000 feet. Well, possibly they couldn't, because it might have been a similar scenario, you know.
Now, when you see stuff like this, do you panic? I mean, I know you're out of it now, but do you go into a sweat thinking, that could be me?
I say, well, I think of the crew. I always think of the crew. So many of my friends still fly, Pete.
Yeah.
Do you know, Peter, there's a book out, and we've probably talked about this before. There's a book out, and it's called All Four Engines Failed. And it's by a lady called Betty Toutal. And she was a passenger on board a British Airways flight in, I think it was like sort of late 80s. And basically, that's exactly what happened. It was a jumbo jet, four engines, and all four engines failed. And they were going through, I think it was going over Jakarta. And they got to a point where the captain, Ron, what was his name? Oh, I think his name was Moody. And he was basically, came to a point, and he made the decision. And he said, right, okay, we're not going to clear the mountains now. We need to go out, and we need to ditch on the sea. Now, ditching is something that, again, this is what we'll talk about today's instant peak. Crew are so well trained in this country, and, you know, ditching is a process that, you know, it's your biggest nightmare. It's when an aircraft lands on water. It has been done, it can happen, and you can survive. I mean, that one on the in New York in the Hudson Bay, do you remember?
Indeed, yes.
Yeah, they all got off, everything was fine, and it can happen. But it makes me think of this particular incident, you know, all four, and I think of the crew. And the one thing that got to me about that, Pete, what this lady describes in the book, and she saw the crew, once they'd made the announcement that it was going to ditch in the sea, the curtain closed, but she saw a little crack in it, and she saw all the crew hug each other. And that's at a point where you think, wow, this is it, you know. And that's probably, you know, today, I mean, you know, they all landed safely. But there'll be a point where crew think, wow, this could be it. You know, it's so scary.
Del, what was the nearest you've ever gone to anything, if anything?
I've suffered some very, very severe turbulence out in South America. I remember doing a shuttle once from Rio to, where were we going? We were going to somewhere else. Rio, I think it might have been Rio Buenos Aires shuttle. And it was the most horrendous turbulence I've ever suffered. Literally where we all left the ground. We all left off the floor, basically, in the middle of service. I had what's called a nose wheel collapse once going into Gibraltar, which is a really bad airport. Fortunately, again, we didn't do any evacuations. But Pete, touching wood here next to me, even though I'm not flying, I was very lucky. You know, I mean, I didn't have anything sort of, you know, that bad. But
after you had those problems, did you ever come off saying, I've got to leave this?
You do think about it. Yeah. That crew today, I mean, will be probably, they'll be all debriefed and what have you and stuff. And then, because what will probably happen is now they'll give them the option tomorrow to go back to Las Vegas, you know. They'll go to a hotel tonight, they'll also have a chat and, you know.
Is it best to fly straight away
I think it is, Peter, yeah. Yeah, I think it probably is, yeah, because if you sit in your room and sort of, you know, sort of stew about it, you know. Today's incident, Peter, just to, you know, give people listening an idea, there's two sort of things when you're flying. You've got what's called a pre-planned emergency, and you've got what's called, like, obviously, an unplanned emergency. Pre-planned, obviously, is a good one because, you know, what will happen is that if ever you're on an aircraft and you hear on BA, the alert call is, will the senior crew member report to the flight deck immediately? If you hear that, there's something going on. It doesn't mean it's awful. Don't panic, you know what I mean? But it means that the chief will go to the flight deck and he'll get what's called a NITS briefing, NITS, nature, intention, time, and any special requests or, you know, things that need to be done. That's what would have happened today. They'll have known there was a problem today on that aircraft. They would have done an alert call. I don't know if Virgin's is the same, but it'll be along those lines. The chief would have gone to the flight deck, and the flight deck would just write, here's our problem. Here's the nature, here's the intention, here's the time we've got remaining, and here's the specific things that we need, you know, need done. So he will then go downstairs. He'll report to, he'll call every single station on the aircraft. Each door has a phone. They'll all listen to it. What he, you know, has to say, and as you, some of the passengers said today, the crew were fantastic. I'm sure they were, you know, and they will have gone through the whole. Obviously, the pre-flight safety briefing will go through again, but they'll talk to you more in detail about the brace position. They'll go through and they'll shout at you. They won't be talking. They won't be saying like, "Would you please fire?" They'll say to you, "You know, unfasten your seatbelt, fasten it now. Show me how you do that, so that people know how to fasten it and unfasten it." And you know, it's a scary process, but it's robotic, Pete. It's something you've trained from day one. It's, you know. And I think it instills confidence, even though you're shouting at them.
Now, tell me, what will happen about the fuel? How does that work?
Fuel-wise, as you saw today, I don't know if you were watching it, Pete. I was actually watching on this particular weather. He was circling for a long time, like sort of down towards Brighton, going out of the sea. They will have dumped some fuel, but they will have kept some, obviously, for, you know, because quite often in a nose wheel incident or an undercarriage incident, what happens is they can actually do flypasts, literally past the ATC building, and they will say to them, look, okay, yeah, the right one isn't looking good or what have you, or, you know, so they do need some fuel to be able to do these sort of things, and, you know, but no, basically, they'll have dumped a lot of fuel, Peter, because obviously fuel equals weight, and coming back, they can't land, obviously, you know, sort of on a weighty situation, especially when the undercarriage is dodgy, but I think they did a great job, didn't you? Did you see it all?
I haven't seen it. I've heard about it because I've been in Panto, so I've missed it all.
Right.
But I've heard about it. Mm. It was a scary time when you think of what's happening, and you can imagine people even more scared knowing what's happened over in Singapore. So that's the worrying time. When they went into land, I presume the crew would be as scared as the passengers.
Definitely. I mean, again, it's all about procedure. It's all routine. But at the end of the day, we're all human, Peter, aren't we? So, you know, they will have been shouting things like, you know, get your heads down, keep your heads down, get your heads down, keep your heads down. And that's what will happen until they land. And then it's like, brace, you know. The flight deck will also make a couple of announcements, you know, at so many hundred feet, it's, you know, cabin crew, take your seats for landing, cabin crew, you know, like brace, and that's when they'll be shouting to the passengers, brace, keep your heads down, brace, keep your heads down. Although it doesn't, you know, necessarily, they didn't need that today. It's just a procedure that protects them, that if anything did go wrong.
Am I right in assuming, Del, that for all the problems we've got, it's still one of the safest modes to travel?
Totally, Peter. It's been a very unfortunate year. There was a figure quoted today I saw on the internet about, I think it's about 1,214 fatalities this year. But, you know, it's relative. If you spread that over a certain period of time, Peter, it is still, you know, if you, one of the most safest, you know. I remember an old captain of ours that used to make an announcement. Once we'd landed, wherever it was, he'd always say, "Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for flying with us today. You're now about to start the most dangerous part of your journey, and that's your drive home." And I thought that was quite, you know, quite interesting.
I love that.
That's what he used to say. But I'm just glad that everyone, you know, today obviously, you know, got off safely off the Virgin aircraft. And I just hope, you know, for the families, Peter, that are, you know, of the AirAsia people, and you know, they find something, they find either a wreckage or what have you. But for the people of Malaysia Airlines, how would we feel now knowing that that Malaysia one still hasn't been found?
Still hasn't been found. I can't imagine how those people, the families, the loved ones, I just can't imagine how they feel. They must be absolutely, well, they haven't got a life, have they? Because they don't know anything about their loved ones. They don't know where they are. I don't know if there's any searches still going on.
You don't hear about it. That's the frustrating thing, you know, and I think until they find something, I personally feel that I'd be hanging on to the fact that I want to believe the conspiracy theory that they're on an island somewhere being held captive in some ways, you know. But it's just devastating. But, it's been a really, you know, rough year for aviation, and let's hope that 2015 is a better one, Peter.
And while we're talking to you, let's have a little bit of respect for the staff on board planes, because I think some people are bloody rude, especially in the budget airlines. I think they're a disgrace.
Totally.
You know, you're doing a job. You can't change what you're doing. You're doing a job. I think, in general, 99.9% of the staff that I've flown with over the years I've been flying are amazing, and I hate people that are rude to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, nobody wants to do that demonstration at the beginning of the flight. It's a mandatory thing that has to be done. And at the end of the day, like today, it's something that could help you. You know what
absolutely.
I mean? It's, you know, count the number of seats when you get on board to know how many rows you are from an exit, or because you don't know when you might need it, Peter.
Del, I've got to mention on a lighter note, every time I think of you, I always remember that photograph you sent me from Hong Kong, and he took it from the bath looking out. I think it was the 36th floor.
Something stupid.
Something
like
ridiculous. That was from the bath. How the hell you even got out that bath? I'll never know.
Well, I've got a fear of heights, Peter. I seriously have a fear of heights.
That's why the picture was shaking.
Well, exactly, yeah.
Del, always nice to talk to you.
And you. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.